Greetings, brethren, once again, and welcome to another Sabbath Bible study. I certainly hope and pray that all of you are doing well, and I can report that things are going reasonably well here as well. Thank you very much, as always, for your prayers, your support, for those of you who contribute financially to the outreach effort that we are seeking to make. My profound thanks to you, and may God's blessing indeed be upon you. We make a point of never asking for money, and this certainly is not an appeal for one either, by the way. But certainly we do definitely appreciate, and I do try to write those who contribute and express my personal thanks from time to time. But I certainly can tell you that this operation that we are involved in, starting from the most minute and ignominious beginning, I must say, three outcasts from the larger churches just happening by God's design, I suppose, to be thrown together in a little two-room apartment, meeting over a coffee table, and not having any idea where this was going to lead or what it was going to entail or what we were going to encounter or that anything at all would even develop. In fact, there was no intent of developing anything at that point. It was simply a matter of studying the Word and not being hindered by the rules and traditions of men. And before long, one thing led to another. Someone began to, or someone wrote and said, "I heard you left such and such a church. Do you have a place to meet?" And we'd say, "Yeah, we've got a little two-room apartment we're in." And they would say, "Well, would you send me a tape? Would you make a tape of it?" So we decided to make tapes of our little Bible study. We had a little jam box, and it was sitting on the table, and the recordings were horrible. But we sent a few of those out to people in the outlying areas that knew of the fact that we had left. And I had written material and done things that, to a point to where people some people had recognized my name. I was no great leader of any kind at that time or at this time either, but as far as that goes. But that was kind of the way it got started, and then one thing led to another. And today it's just amazing that God has blessed the labor here, and not just my labor, but a number of the brethren as well who are scattered around the world and who help us out. And today we reach out to probably 5,000 or so. Not a huge audience, but by no means is it insignificant in numbers. But numbers, of course, are not the most important thing at all. But the privilege of being able to serve is certainly something that I am reminded of every time I turn on this tape machine in front of me and sit at this little microphone. And it's really in a converted bedroom that's kind of been converted into an office recording, not studio, that's too fancy a word, but a place to record and basically a junk pile as well. You can hardly get around in this room. But it is a privilege to be able to connect with some of God's people on a regular basis and to realize from the feedback that there is good being done. And I'm so thankful because I realize how much of God's grace is involved in the fact that I am where I am and who I am and what I am. Because I know myself, and you don't want to know me that well, believe me. You don't want to know where I've been and what I've done. And in like manner, I really don't want to know what you've been and what you've done, because these things have to be brought before the Father in heaven and indeed covered by the blood of Christ. And when they are, we don't need to dredge them up again. A lot of us do. That's really the crux in many people's lives, is the fact that they carry their guilt with them after they have been forgiven. And this is not good. We should leave the guilt behind, the shame behind, when we do it. But it's hard. It was hard for Paul. Paul reminisced on various occasions about his past, calling himself the chief of sinners, calling himself the least of the apostles, calling himself really a murderer. In essence, which indeed he was an accomplice, no question about it. But that's the way we grow. We grow, and it's just amazing. The more we think we know God, or the more we know about God, the bigger He gets. You know, the more we think we have a handle on the truth, the bigger it gets. The more we realize we don't know, and I wonder if it's not a never-ending search, a never-ending unfolding of truths and precious knowledge and understanding and opportunity that will be with us forever. as children of God? I certainly hope so, and I would have no reason to believe that that would not be the case. Well, nevertheless, my thanks to all of you who are on the tape list. Thank you just for being willing to receive the tapes. And certainly a special thanks, as I said, to those who support us in one way or another for all the prayers. Myself, personally, I'm doing a fair bit better than I was, a little stronger. But I'm having to pace myself, obviously. But I really appreciate all the concern during my period of recuperation from this very serious setback and illness that I have been facing. I'm going to continue, as you can see by the label on your tape, I'm going to continue in the series on the specter of globalism this week, and this will be tape number 8 in the series. It will be the last one that I will make for a while, probably, because we want to get back into other areas of spiritual growth and of the scriptures that we will probably depart from somewhat in this tape, and that's been the cases in the instances where we have had made the other globalism series tapes. But certainly, even in giving the overview here of certain world news events and how they are connected with what's going on in the world that you see reported in the newspapers or on CNN or whatever, even in doing that, there is a purpose that is still biblically connected, because the Bible is not silent about what is occurring in the world even today, and I would say especially today. And so it is from that perspective that we want to view things that are occurring, whether they are overt and obvious and on the surface where we can simply read about them, or whether they are more subtle and behind the scenes, the powers that are behind the thrones, as it were, the manipulators, because there is a lot of behind-the-scenes movement, a lot of manipulation going on in the world in this concerted effort toward globalization, a global community. This is the goal of the United Nations, no question about it. It is the goal of virtually every leader of the so-called free world. I cannot speak as authoritatively about certain third world countries who are emerging and who are struggling, but basically third world countries are dominated by, one way or another, by larger nations and higher and greater powers. And they basically are subservient to them. And in fact, they are the most exploited of all peoples on earth, I suppose, are the emerging nations, the third world nations, because of their vulnerability. But certainly the main objective of a global push towards globalism has to do with this country right here, the United States of America, because it remains one of the last, certainly the greatest, of the last bastions of democracy, freedom, quote-unquote. And I realize that many of our freedoms have already been abridged or abolished. There are laws on the books now, both in this country and in international law or United Nations law or whatever you want to term, however you wish to term that, that already supersede the constitution of this country and the constitutions of any nation on the face of the earth. They're not rigidly being enforced yet, but they are created and on the books so that when the time comes, when the opportunity is ripe, they will become law of the land or law of the world in whichever case we're talking about here. So it's a very serious situation. America, and particularly the middle class of America, has been under systematic attack for the last 30 years, literally. And to a great extent, the middle class in the United States has been very weakened. In some cases, on the fringes, it's been shrunk. Let's put it that way. It has been shrunk over a period of years. And the middle class in America, the working middle class, is basically the backbone of the economic life of this country. They provide the bulk of the taxes that are, quite frankly, illegally collected by the Internal Revenue Service in this country. And in fact, the entire structure of American law and jurisprudence is totally wrong, totally unbiblical, totally unlawful in and of itself. Now, that's a fact. And that can be demonstrated without any hesitation or question whatsoever. And it can be proven in any fair court of law. That's how sure and certain the proof is. This country is literally today based upon a system and a combination of laws and intertwining powers that actually supersede the Constitution and the constitutional rights granted the government of this country. It is a very, very difficult, strange, and a very critical situation that we are in today as members or as citizens of this country or as citizens of the world, if you want to just extend it out. I'm going to pick up now where I left off. And I was talking with you about Prince Charles of England. We went over some of his background, some of his lineage last time. We talked about something called the Gaia hypothesis. If you did not receive tape 7 in the series of globalism and you want to follow up what I'm talking about here and get the background, please write and ask for it. That would really be somebody that was just fairly new on the tape list because it was made last week. But Charles was greatly influenced by James Lovelock, who formulated the Gaia hypothesis. The Gaia hypothesis takes its name from the Greek goddess of the same name, Gaia, G-A-I-A, who was the Earth Mother. The Earth Mother, and so obviously the Gaia philosophy has something to do with the Earth, and it, of course, has something to do with the environment. And it is basically the philosophy, totally unbiblical and unscriptural, basically the philosophy that man is equal to every other element of the environment, be it plant, be it mineral, be it animal. Now, that is not what your Bible tells you. Your Bible says that man is to have dominion over the fowls of the air and the land, the animals on land and things of this nature. He is not to have rule over each other, however. See, that was never given to man's or to the human race, and yet we have taken it and turned it right around. We now rule over each other, sometimes with harsh cruelty, and almost always in corruption and with problems, great problems. And instead of dominating the earth as we are supposed to, why, we make laws and have hypotheses like the Gaia hypothesis and great concerted global efforts to bring the environment up to the same level as the man or a woman. That's what the Gaia philosophy is all about. And Prince Charles is perhaps the leading figure in the world today pushing the Gaia philosophy. It is absolutely something God hates. And yet, one of the most significant men in the world is pushing it. He's not alone by any means. We talked about public-private partnerships last time, which would be here's the way it would work on a small scale. A town has certain financial problems. To solve those problems, the city government would make a binding contract with a larger corporate entity that had plenty of money, sometimes with a bank, but usually with a larger corporate entity or perhaps a foundation, such as the Ford Foundation, Mellon Foundation, Kellogg Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, this type of, that are just heavily money. You see, the foundations in this country, of which there are many, were originally established so that monies by the millions and even billions that eventually poured in profits from the corporate entities and from the investment bankers and the Wall Street crowd, etc., could be funneled into these foundations, ostensibly for philanthropic purposes, but in reality they became huge tax shelters and ways of simply robbing the country of wealth and depositing it tax-free for the right kind of use. Now, the laws are written in such a way that these large foundations can get away, the loopholes and et cetera, they can take advantage of, to where they only have to show a very modest amount of money expended on philanthropic activities. And otherwise, they have become heavily laden with money that has been there for years and years and years, almost all of this century at least, in many cases. So you make this combination where you have a government and a corporate entity and perhaps a foundation or another moneyed source, and they combine. And they are given the money, the problem is solved, but the corporate entity retains control because the corporate entity supplies the money. And so what you have is either on a very small grassroots level or perhaps on a state or province level, considering the whole world's view here, or county level, perhaps, or parish level. You see what I'm saying? The various intermediate steps or levels, you could work your way all the way up to state and even federal or national level, perhaps even regional level. If you wanted to, like the North American Free Trade Agreement has set aside a region of the earth as sort of separate. North America, Canada, United States of America, and Mexico. It's possible that in order to solve even regional problems, you could employ the public-private partnership. But what you get after, when you do this, is you get a weakened government, and you get a strengthened control by the ones who have money. Hope I'm making myself clear here. It is a very, very sinister combination of factors. And the reason I say it's sinister, and if you'll bear with me, I'll just give you a little explanation, and I'm going to preface it by saying I am speculating just a bit here. But the speculation is really based on some facts and some evidence that I think puts it into the category, at least in my estimation, of a healthy speculation. It could be wrong. I could be wrong here. But what I perceive is happening is that it is the goal of those who would like to see this happen, naturally, and that is that the world would be divided up into regions. The Club of Rome, as many of you know if you've looked into that, which was formed in the early 70s, I believe, and has had as one of its goals, and by the way, it's one of the most influential and powerful organizations in the world, in spite of the fact that it's not highly publicized. So you see, the real thing is that most of the efforts that are ongoing in this world in the push towards globalism simply are not publicized. It would be counterproductive on their part if they did that. Most of Prince Charles's work for the environment and for globalism is not highly publicized at all, and he doesn't want it to be. He would rather it be in the background, of course, because that is how things can get done. That is how you bypass so much of the criticism and opposition and the roadblocks, obviously, that would be set up. Because if everything was divulged that was going on behind the scenes to the average citizen in the world, there would be an uproar over it if they could really understand it. But, of course, this is the way things are done. It's done through manipulation. We all know that. But the public-private partnership is really a pattern or a blueprint for the control of the world. And it works this way, and I'll have to be very brief and simplistic here. But the world, the goal is for the world to be divided up, perhaps into 10 regions. That certainly is the Club of Rome's avowed desire and objective. Now, the Bible speaks about 10 kings in the end, and, you know, I've wondered, as I'm sure a lot of you have, who are aware of the notion that the world it may be divided up into 10 camps, that may actually be what the Bible is talking about, as opposed to simply 10 single nations. It could be 10 regions, and the king could be synonymous with the kingdom, as it often is in the Scriptures. And so that is a possibility, I would certainly suggest, of a fulfillment, a latter-day fulfillment of what we see in the book of Revelation when it talks about these 10 kings giving their power to the beast for, I think, an hour or a short space of time or whatever the case may be. There, I don't have my Bible open to that point right now, but I'm sure you'll recall that. But once the division of the earth takes place, of the world takes place, then the public-private partnerships, which already will have been established in various areas, because this will have to have, that will have been part of the groundwork. But eventually, each region is going to be tied in and governed by a public-private partnership or public-private trust or covenant that has been made. And in essence, every job, every facet of the economy and of the use of the environment is going to be tied together in this public-private corporation. In fact, corporation may be the very key word to use. And if you understand much about what a corporation is and how corporate law functions, then you probably can catch a vision of what I'm saying more easily than if you did not know that. And I don't have time to get into corporate law. But quite frankly, this nation is a corporation. That's right. The United States of America is a corporation. So is Great Britain. You are members of a corporation right now. You may not want to be once you knew the truth about corporations and how, where they came from. In fact, it is a, I'll just tell you flat out, it comes from Satan the devil. That's right. And the systems that operate in this world's governments are of Satan the devil. They are not of God. Now, God permits them, but God did not create them. God did not, that is, they do not have his design stamped on them at all, nor do they have his approval. Now, some of you argue about that because you say, oh, well, it says over there in Romans 13 or whatever, and you know, this, that we have to be subject to the powers that be. Brethren, you need to rethink some of that. You really do. Because, believe me, the Bible says we must obey God rather than men. Now, you'll all agree with that. Now, the next thing that needs to be determined is what I'm obeying of God. Is it of God? We have to obey God rather than men. Now, we've always adopted the philosophy, well, as long as what they tell us doesn't cause us to disobey God, we're okay. That may be okay to say, but it puts a heavy responsibility on the person saying it to prove whether or not what he is adhering to, clinging to, and obeying is of God or not. And I will tell you this, this entire country, the entire fabric of this country's government and economic policies and social policies are not from God. They are from Satan the devil and from carnally minded men. They are not based on biblical principles, at least not in the way they are operating today and in what we have to face and encounter today. And I think the idea of obeying every law just simply because you read a passage in the Bible that said be subject to the higher powers. Let me tell you who the higher powers are. I say they are the Father in heaven and His Son at His right hand. That's who I say the higher powers are. And we had better know what we are a part of and what we are involved in if we're going to make the right kinds of choices. I believe the time is coming when God's people are going to have to make some serious choices about how much longer they're going to be involved in many of the things that they're a part of right now. I'm not saying the time is right at this moment, though for some it may be. But I believe that we are approaching a crossroads in time that is going to be very critical, where more of us than have ever before in the past are going to have to look at the conditions in this world, the systems of this world, and are going to have to make some very hard choices as to just how much of the system we're going to remain a part of and hold on to. And I won't go any further with that. I could, very much so. I don't mean to be an alarmist. I don't mean to be saying something out of school here. But I do have strong feelings on it, and I have a lot of information at my fingertips that tells me that we are in serious trouble as a nation. We are in serious trouble with God as a nation. And God is not going to be mocked. He is not going to have His word trampled on forever. And He is not going to make promises that He doesn't keep. And sometimes those promises are not nice. That is to say, they don't always end up pleasing those to whom the promises eventually come. And it is something to take into consideration. The evil society that we live in is all around us. It is full of snares. It is full of entrapment. Agreements have been made that you and I have not been a party to or have not been privy to, and yet they rule our lives. We need to know a little more about what's going on in this world. And believe me, you will not get it by watching television or reading your newspaper. You'll just get highlights of things that the controlled media wants you to know. That's right, the media is controlled. That's not a wild, unprovable statement. That's as easily demonstrated as probably proving one and one is two. Anybody who today who does not understand that the mass media is a controlled media for the most part basically is an ostrich with his head in the ground. I mean, that's even known on many levels. I mean, that's a foregone conclusion. That's a fait accompli. So I'm certainly not off the wall or out in left field when I make such a statement as that. Well, anyway, we talked about public-private partnerships. Eventually, I personally believe if this plan goes forward any further, or much further, We will see the world divided up into various regions, perhaps 10, and then you will see the whole economic and political life of the country or the region intertwined together in a compact or a combination of government and business, of government and corporate entities and heavily moneyed foundations that will then control each region. Now, the environment is the one thing that is common to the entire world. Everybody partakes of the environment. So the environment is going to be perhaps the number one focus of this push for globalism. It will not necessarily be a military push, or primarily a military push, though military will be involved. And it may not be totally economic, though it almost surely will be greatly economic. But the environmental issue is probably going to be used as the outward, ostensible reason for the changes that will take place in order to preserve the environment. That will be the ostensible reason for what is actually, but what is actually behind it is control, primarily economic control. Because not only does economic control give you political control, economic control gives you all the money, too, and the profit. And the greed of the people who are involved in these types of things is insatiable, I can tell you. I mean, they have no more regard for human life than they would for a plant, in many cases. And all they want is money, power, and the freedom to do as they wish, obviously. Well, eventually, I believe that... And you can just chalk this up to my own speculation, that's fine. But I do believe that eventually, in order to get a job, in order to make a living, to buy groceries to put on your table or a roof over your head, you're going to have to be tied into a system that the Bible essentially says not to be a part of. Now, we've talked about implantable microchips and cashless societies and smart cards and things of this nature, and all of those are on the books. That's being done in certain areas of the world on a limited scale, and certainly the technology is there. But, that's rather obvious when you actually have to have a chip implanted. But if you cannot get a job because you have spoken out against a corporate entity or spoken out against a government or stood up for the truth in some way, and you simply are ousted and cannot go down the street and get another job because it's tied into the same system, and the people who would hire you there have the same information that the ones that fired you, and they said, you will not just be somebody that was hard to get along with. You will be an outcast. I would be an outcast. And it's not that we could go down and say, well, look, we had a little misunderstanding. That won't be there. What will be there is a traitor, global traitor, T-R-A-I-T-O-R, traitor, global traitor. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that being stamped on your permanent records all over the world in the computer banks that will be the information and data access for a global society, that you are not fit to... earn a living in a global society, that you are, I believe last time I said that we would be considered dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. Can you imagine that God's people are going to possibly fall into that kind of condemnation by the world? Well, of course we can see it, because the Bible is replete with the warnings of what it's going to be like at the end time. It's going to be a time in which you, and if you and I were living in it, or whoever God's people are when that time comes, they're going to be in a living hell on this earth because of who they are and because of the fact that they keep the commandments and have the testimony of our Savior. And whether we're going to enter into that time soon, whether or not we're already in that time, remains to be seen perhaps, but I don't know that we'll have to wait too much longer to find out. I'm not going out on some limb and predict exactly what might occur at what particular time, because I don't really know. I have ideas, I have speculations, I've done calculations, so have you. But it is not necessary, I do not believe, that we know the day or the hour. The Bible says that man does not know that, and I consider that to be a correct statement. Let me move on here. I could talk forever on this. I just start reeling this off the top of my head, and I don't really remember hardly where I was before. So before I reach that point, let me back up here and talk about the Club of Rome, which is one of the chief tools for globalism in the world today, and certainly has had enjoyed a very close relationship with Prince Charles of England. He works behind the scenes. As I said, most people will not find Prince Charles or his environmental activities in the headlines of major newspapers. The first United Nations Environmental Conference was held in 1972. It was called the United Nations Conference on the Environment and Development. And 20 years later, in 1992, they held another one. And they produced a program of action called Agenda 21 and a second document called Global Biodiversity Assessment, over 1,000 pages long. Together, these two documents contain an agenda that can only be called evil, as the implementation of the action items will turn freedom into bondage and life into misery, as all of what we know today will ultimately be replaced with a planned electronic society in which our only value will be to produce. That's a horrible thought, but it's one that's coming. The United Nations global planners and other manipulators behind the scenes simply look at human beings as either workers or ones that are fit to be killed because they are useless eaters. They consume too much. It doesn't matter whether they fit in. It doesn't matter whether or not they are qualified to get jobs. And if they're not qualified, that's the reason they can't. There are no excuses. There are no gray areas. A common person in this world is either a worker or he is history. He is history. That's where we're headed. Now, I'm not saying everything that I'm talking about today is going to be implemented. These are plans that are on the books and are in the minds of many who work for globalism today. And this is the exact agenda that Prince Charles is pushing. You know, Prince Charles comes from a long line of kings and royal people. Back in the Middle Ages, the times were known as the feudalistic times, where the great landed people and families controlled everything, and the rest were peasants. Well, we are going ultimately to return to feudalistic times, and the Bible predicts it, no question about it, in which the world is going to be ruled by a relatively handful of people, and the rest are going to be reduced down to nothing but peasants working to generate all of the goods and services that are needed by those who are in power. And so it's a very serious situation that we're looking at right now. It should be noted, and I believe I may have mentioned this last time, that Vice President Al Gore and Prince Charles have a common mentor, and that man was Armand Hammer. An incredible history of this man. His biography would, if someone could actually write the true biography of this man, it would be absolutely astounding. He has furthered the cause of socialism and even communism in this country probably as much as any single man, even though he was not viewed as a communist. He would have been viewed perhaps as a socialist or quasi-socialist by some people. But he was a great philanthropist, a multi-millionaire who had the ear of kings and rulers and presidents just at will, virtually, and just absolutely did more than any other one to exploit this country and to certainly bring about a haven for socialism and communism in everywhere he went. And of course, he profited greatly by it as well, because he was able to do business with countries that every other manufacturer or corporate entity in the country was forbidden to do. And it's just an amazing story. But one of Armand Hammer's greatest wishes was for a global society. And Al Gore and Prince Charles considered Armand Hammer their close associate. For all the years that he was alive, he was the friend of people like Prince Charles and Al Gore. And you know that Al Gore, our vice president here, constantly is on an environmental kick of some kind or another. That is, he's written a book on it. That is his emphasis. That is his effort. He has been the main representative of this country in the various congresses and seminars and conferences that have been held on the environment worldwide. And so he is a major player, Vice President Gore is. And this will only increase if, indeed, he does succeed Bill Clinton as president of this country. I'm not saying he will. I have no idea. But certainly if he does, his election to that office may be more ominous than actually Bill Clinton's tenure as president of this country, which has been bad enough as it is. But Al Gore is a man whose agenda is much more, or his public agenda and what we can discern from his private agenda seems to be much more in line with what is generally the thrust of globalism today than even Bill Clinton. But that remains to be seen. That's highly speculative because we do not know even who's going to be running fully. We could probably hazard a guess on that. But anyway, it is interesting that, oh, and by the way, we also, I think, talked just a moment or two about sustainable development. And that is about balancing social equity, which is a longtime socialist concern, economic vitality, which is the capitalist concern, and the new concern, environmental sustainability. So sustainable development says that all of the world's assets are finite and that we must preserve today's resources for future generations. See, that sounds good. But it also implies that we have to know how much of every resource we have. Somehow it's got to be counted. Then it's got to be monitored so that it can be determined who's adding to the Earth's resources and who's using up the Earth's resources. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund are the two entities, both UN-created, that are dealing with this situation. They are studying ways in which the production and the consumption of every person on the face of the earth can be measured. We are going to ultimately be, brethren, at the mercy of the United Nations and the environmentalists for all the answers. It's going to involve a whole new level of law, both national and international, so that these resources are protected. And for anyone who misuses them by their determination, not yours, according to the environmentalists' understanding and determination or interpretation, there are going to be penalties, there are going to be fines, there's going to be imprisonment, there may even be death, depending on just how serious it all is. And as I said last time, you will not have a choice of where you live and where you work. That will be decided for you. And your life will be highly monitored. That's already, the technology is already in place, and some of it's being done already. Private land ownership is a principal instrument of accumulating wealth, and therefore it contributes to social injustice. This is the philosophy. Public ownership of land is justified in favor of the common good rather than to protect the interests of those who own the land. In 1993, the World Bank established a division for sustainable development. The World Bank has since added four other dimensions for monitoring the assets of the world through sustainable development, and they are this. Number one, natural capital. That is to say, the minerals of the earth, the water, the forest, anything natural. Number two, manufactured capital. Anything that's built, like roads, buildings, homes, things of that nature. Number three, human capital. That's every living person on the earth. Particularly their age, their health, their experience, their education, and their ability to work. And number four, social capital, how people think. That is, politically correct thinking. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, for the most part, have developed or are in the process of developing how to measure each of these quantities or each of these entities in every country, including the United States. All UN and all UN-related organizations and agencies espouse sustainable development. These concepts permeate UN documents from beginning to end. Their goals, their seminars, their pilot projects are filled with this type of thinking, of this type of control of the tentacles of the United Nations being spread out all over this world in order to monitor and control. It will all be done for ostensibly good reasons, sound reasons, because we should not overtly pollute the environment. And people who do that should be punished. I agree with that. Of course, we all do. But if somebody had sinister motives and said, aha, I see that if I use the environmental issue, which will be sensitive to many people and affect all people, and I get a law passed or I get a philosophy pushed that will look like I am in step with helping the environment, but actually, once the law is in place, I or someone else will be able to do something else with it that will end up giving me control, then I'm all in favor of it. That's the best possible scenario, because the environmental issue is going to cover the real motive. Therefore, it will look like it's good. It will sound like it's good. And if it were used only for that purpose, it might be good. But if there is another purpose behind it, so that it simply uses the environmental issue as a front, then once it's in place and the right set of circumstances comes about, which can be created, by the way, then the full force of the law or the philosophy takes over. Anyway, sustainable development, brethren, has really permeated local, state, and federal governments in almost every country in the world today. It has been incorporated in the whole philosophy of the United Nations and all of their big mega conferences throughout this decade, even up till this very day. The International Chamber of Commerce, which then filters down to the local level, is involved in it too. The World Bank and all of its lending practices, the International Monetary Fund. Brethren, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, unless you know what's going on here, you cannot get the picture. This is, these two entities, which are United Nations created groups, basically right now are controlling a huge percentage of the world's money. It is the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to which nations now go to get loans. Not individual, nations. And that international, the International Monetary Fund is primarily sustained by the United States of America, because we are the richest nation in the United Nations by far, and in the world by far. And you and I, as middle-class taxpayers, pay that. It may go to buy who knows what, farm equipment for somebody somewhere. Most of it, a good deal of it, ends up in the pockets of financiers, of Wall Street bankers, of foundations, and things like this that just drain the system and skim monies by the multiple millions and billions into their coffers, and only a relatively small percentage, probably less than half, ever gets to the country it's needed. And then they don't have to pay it back, because they're not ever going to be able to pay it back anyway, and it's all known, it's all part of the game. They're not going to pay it back. There was never an intention to paying it back. Also, there may be some rare country that does, or they may have made a token effort to do so. We'll pay for it, the American taxpayer. And the system has been set up this way so that ultimately the American middle class is just systematically being compressed and drained. You see, you can drain it only so far. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can squeeze out. The old saying is you can't get blood from a turnip. You know, it's true. But the manipulators, what they're doing is that they are working in a very sinister, careful way, painstakingly, a piece at a time, and moving closer and closer so that they are containing the American middle class, which is the backbone of the money that they want. That's where it's coming from. These poor nations in the world, these third world countries, these emerging countries, boy, they're poverty stricken. They have no money. They may have natural resources, which are going to be exploited, as they always have been, by the power brokers, of course, and the money mongers. That's absolutely true. But it's the American middle class primarily, and a few other classes as well in other countries, but primarily the American middle class that is being bled dry now, and they've done it in such a stealthy, careful way that the American public is really ignorant of it. And so they've held on to that central hub of money longer than they ever thought they could.